everyone, and thank you so much for tuning in to Wellness Wednesday. This is Ryan with KYUK, our producer here for this very show, and I'm back once again with another amazing, wonderful Wellness Wednesday special. I'm joined by not one, not two, but three very special guests today. With us today, we have Yasmin Rotman, a Rural Outreach Coordinator for the Commission of Aging. We have Steffi Kim, the Assistant Professor at University of Alaska Anchorage and Director of the Alaska Native Community Engaged Aging Research Lab. And we have Joy Anderson from Alaska Legal Services. She's the co-director of the Community Justice Worker Resource Center. How are you guys doing? Thank you much for being on the show today.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thank you. So our episode topic today is talking about dementia, what it is, what resources and support systems are there in the YK Delta, and other important legal things that people need to know in navigating the whole process and experience. So the first question is breaking down, what is dementia? What are its symptoms? And yeah.
So dementia oftentimes, especially when we talk with community members, is one of the questions we get is, well, what is dementia the same thing as Alzheimer's disease? Because a lot of times people have heard both terms, but they don't really know what either one means. So just to kind of clarify, dementia is an umbrella term for loss of memory and other thinking abilities and severe enough to interfere with daily life. So that's kind of the umbrella term. However, within dementia, there are different diseases that can take part. One is Alzheimer's disease, vascular dementia, Lewy body dementia, frontotemporal dementia, and then mixed dementias can be a variety of those. And there are several other forms as well. Those are just the major ones. And, you know, just to kind of be clear, Alzheimer's disease is the one that occurs most often compared to the other ones. And then to maybe share quickly some of the early symptoms that you may become aware of, there's usually memory loss involved that disrupts daily life, challenges in planning or solving problems, difficulty completing familiar tasks, so it might be even just cooking the general recipe that your loved one has been cooking forever and always remembered, and now suddenly it's not there anymore, and dishes might taste quite very, very different. Confusion with time or place, so the person may not be able to find their way back home, even though they've always lived in that same environment. Trouble understanding visual images and spatial relationships, so identifying maybe the brakes on a bicycle or being able to clip the car seat into the buckle. So some of these things the person may not be able to do anymore. And then also problems with words in speaking and writing. So even not just the general like, oh, I forgot that word, what was it again? But actually not knowing what a person is talking about, or even not being able to express things that they generally were able to talk about. Decreased or poor judgment, that's one of the early signs. If a person starts having trouble making financial decisions, that are usually family members will realize that they suddenly are making very different decisions that they otherwise wouldn't have made. And so that is one thing to watch out for. And then also withdrawal from work or social activities, that social isolation due to the person knowing something is different, something is odd, and it may initially look a little bit like depressive symptoms. And then changes in mood and personality, and these can depend on which kind of dementia, type of dementia we're actually talking about, it may be different.
And so what populations would you say are most susceptible to isolated dementia? Are there people of like a certain age group that needs to be more cautious of showing signs, or?
So of course age is the one and only factor that's like the higher the age, the higher the risk. So that's one. However, there are also now this research available that shows evidence that, for example, Black Americans are twice as likely to develop Alzheimer's disease. Similar for Hispanic Americans, they are 1.5 times as likely to have the disease. And then the other component here is, so the data is not very good yet for Alaska Native and American Indian people. However, 1 in 5 people age 45 and older report experiencing subjective or mild cognitive decline. And so that can be, again, an early sign. Usually, I think it was 20% or say may move forward in actually developing mild cognitive impairment. Also, there's It's not super, not totally conclusive yet. However, it looks like that there's a potentially higher prevalence rate with American Indians and Alaska Native populations. And then the other population are women. Actually, 2/3 of Americans living with Alzheimer's are women.
When should you see a doctor if you think you have dementia?
Very much right away. There's screeners available for physicians that they can use to see if there are memory problems occurring. So not just from anecdotal experience, but also within if it shows within these screeners. Usually as soon as I mentioned those early signs, usually as soon as you feel like, oh, something is shifting. So it can be the physician, but also Alzheimer's Resources of Alaska offers a wonderful resource. And I'm sure Yasmin will talk a little bit more about that. So they are also able in helping maybe some of the screening. The other component, so it may not always be dementia. It may also be a physical condition that could lead to symptoms that look like dementia. So it could be an infection. It can be a vitamin deficiency or other things. So it's important to have it checked out and see if it really is related or if it really is dementia.
Gotcha. And so let's say that somebody, they believe that they have the signs that you just shared. They go to see a doctor. What treatment and support resources are available to those with dementia in the YK Delta region?
First of all, it would be the clinician to engage with them. The second is to check in the resources that maybe the clinician's office has. I'm not sure what that looks like. Each clinic may have a different referral resources if they have a connection to providers. But then also, Yasmin, if you would like to share some of that information later on, that would be wonderful.
Hi, yeah, this is Yasmin. So, of course, you know, I can't speak on behalf of Alzheimer's Resource of Alaska, but we partner with them a lot and share a lot of their materials. And we're always spreading the word about the mini grant that's available. It's $2,500 for any individual or their family, their loved ones, you know, as caregivers of those living with dementia or Alzheimer's. So if you have a diagnosis, you can access that $2,500 mini grant every year. And the timing on when you can apply for it throughout the year is pretty flexible. And Alzheimer's Resource of Alaska will help families or individuals apply for it. They've worked hard to make it a pretty simple application as well. And that money can be used in a variety of ways to meet a lot of needs that the family might need help with, including respite, having someone in the community help with some chores and that kind of thing. I know we haven't talked about risk reduction, and that might be a future question. Alcohol, smoking, really for our senior population, for our elders, a lack of social engagement, being isolated. There have been studies done that show just how important it is to be around others in your community, to stay active physically, you know, and having a connection to other folks in your community. So that's really important for all of us at any age. Unchecked hearing loss, when our hearing starts to go away, we kind of disengage from the world around us. And so it's really important in an elder's annual wellness visit to also get checked their hearing. And if they think that they are experiencing hearing loss or your family starts to notice something going on, that's important to address as soon as possible. And I know we're talking about resources, so I believe that Hospice of Anchorage, for example, they have like baby dolls and those kinds of things available for the community. And it's on my to-do list since our Bethel trip to look into if there's, you know, someone here, in if it's in Anchorage or Fairbanks or wherever, who has some resources like that that they can mail out to more rural communities. That would be really great. Sometimes there can be a stigma around those kinds of tools, you could call it, or toys, I guess. But there has been research that anything that provides that kind of calming, nurturing environment to your loved one who might be experiencing dementia, it's really healthy. It's good to encourage those kinds of behaviors, you know. So having a baby doll that they look after isn't something to be ashamed of. It's a good thing if it brings your loved one some peace and some joy, you know. Memory cafes are getting popular, and I guess there are kind of different definitions, but a gathering place where individuals living with dementia and the community can engage with one another, and it's a safe space for folks to just be able to hang out and get together. And I think in your area, you have a lot of community gatherings that fill that need. And just encouraging music from a person's childhood or from their teenage years, having that music or having memories around that remind, you know, your loved one of their childhood, of the things they loved in their past, can be very powerful. I mean, not only, you know, is it just joyful, but can also really help bring them back in the moment. So having things that are important to them, memories, pictures, having that displayed, helping them remember, you know, guiding them from one place to the next, you know, with photos, that kind of thing can be really helpful. So I just, again, highly recommend if anyone's listening, you can do a memory consultation over the phone or via Zoom with Alzheimer's Resource of Alaska. They do free memory screenings, free consultations if you think something might be up. And you can do those memory screenings, you know, every 6 months or however you want to do it. If you feel like there's an ongoing concern, but you're not sure exactly what's going on. A key thing to remember is normal, you know, forgetfulness. I misplaced my key. Oh, I forgot, you know, what day it was. Oh, is it Friday yet or whatever? But if I were to forget my name or the things that I've known all my life, like Steffi was saying, how to cook a meal that my grandmother taught me, then that would be a red flag that I would want to follow up on, or I would want my family to notice and to support me in.
I just wanted to add a sentence here about the importance of early detection, because you may wonder, you know, why would I go in early? I wait until I really see the signs of when it's very obvious that the person is struggling to function well. So to go early, it can be a real benefit, because it first of all helps to discern, like, okay, what is your trajectory? And again, it could be a medical reason, or it can be trajectory towards dementia. So visiting with a physician, but also having this conversation with your family, like if it is dementia, how do we want to move forward as a family? And as long as the person has capacity to make decisions, and I will not say too much about that, but as long as they're able to do so, they can, together with the family, plan what they would like it to look like. So planning for the future, exploring treatment options, participating possibly in clinical studies, or involve the person with dementia in important discussions, as I mentioned. Those are kind of the benefits of early treatment. And so far, though, just to mention, there is no medication that can cure Alzheimer's. However, if it is early detected, medication can help with the symptoms a little bit. And so that's something to keep in mind. That might be another option you might want to take advantage of.
Yeah, thank you for sharing that, Steffi. Particularly, I'm curious more for the caregivers of people with dementia, because I'm sure there are many listeners tuning in right now who maybe has, like, a family member, like a parent, or maybe they've got a friend or a mentor or partner who may be undergoing a kind of dementia as well. So how can listeners support a loved one who has dementia and be able to take care of themselves throughout that process? Because it can be challenging when someone you love very much may not remember who you are or your relationship to each other. But oftentimes, from what I've seen at least, that love is clearly still there, even if they can't label where it's from. So what would your guys' advice be to people navigating that?
So the International Association for Indigenous Aging has a lot of really helpful resources on their website, and they do have upcoming training, their Dementia Friends program that's tailored specifically for American Indian and Alaska Native communities. If you visit iasquared.org/dementia-friends. Dementia Friends is a training for loved ones and anyone, you know, in the community who wants to prepare themselves or learn about the disease. I did the training myself and I found it to be incredibly useful. After you complete the free information session, they also have a champion level training. I haven't done that one, but I've heard good things, and that's even more involved, and it's learning how to become a Dementia Friends champion for your community so that when you get that champion training, you can train others in teaching them what dementia is and how caregivers can support and assist their loved ones who are going through this experience. If you visit, it's called IA Squared for short, the International Association for Indigenous Aging. You'll also see they have a rooms experience. It's interactive. It's pretty cool. You can click on different settings, like in the kitchen, what are things to be aware of if your loved one has dementia, some common things that happen versus in a restaurant or if you're using public transportation. They actually even have a downloadable dementia bingo that is a really cool way to educate. And Steffi can share more. I think we heard on this last trip feedback that the caregiver support groups that exist are really helpful. So finding people in your community who have gone through this experience that you can rely on for guidance, for wisdom and support, even just online, you know, chat groups and reading comments, because so many people are experiencing this. Alzheimer's Association does have a 24/7 helpline. That's really an awesome resource. I know several people that have used it. So you can call literally at any time of the night, anything that you're experiencing or you have questions on and you want to get a better understanding. There's a real person you can talk to there who's trained to answer your questions. And Alzheimer's Resource of Alaska, they do have several online caregiver groups. If you visit their website, you can check those out. I think this is something Steffi is working on, but, you know, building a network in your communities of families that have gone through this, because we really are stronger together. And so for Alzheimer's Resource of Alaska, you can visit alzalaska.org.
We're hoping to develop a website. It's called ancarelab.com. That is for Alaska Native communities specifically, touching on brain health, aging well, and dementia as well. And under the dementia tab, we're hoping to build up a community chat for caregivers so that caregivers in the communities can maybe connect with one another and ask for support. So at this point, we don't have too many participants yet, but we're hoping that we might have a few more signing up so that we can create that group and also create more content on the website. So if you have any, you can connect via email with that website and let us know what you would like to see on it as well.
Joy, we're going to bring it over to you and your expertise. So what do people with dementia need to know about navigating things like wills, are there unique considerations, and any other important legal support services out there for folks?
Sure. Thanks, Ryan. This is general legal information and not specific legal advice, but I want to talk a little bit about legal documents that will help individuals before they lose their capacity, which Steffi started out mentioning capacity, and that's the ability to make and communicate an informed decision. And any of us, as Yasmin said, could lose capacity at any time, really, through an accident or a disease or something like dementia and Alzheimer's. So the documents I'm about to talk about are important for elders, but they're really important for everyone to both get these documents in place and make sure they remain up to date. The first type of documents I'll talk about are advance directives, and that's a legal document that appoints another person to act on your behalf, even if you become incapacitated. One of these documents is called a power of attorney. That's where you appoint an agent to handle financial and personal affairs. And it's important to note this agent's powers end when you pass away. You can appoint the agent now while you have capacity, and their powers can become, you know, effective immediately or effective if you become incapacitated. And you can also have their powers begin now and continue even after your incapacity. And that's called a durable power of attorney. Another type of advance directive is an advanced healthcare directive. And this appoints an agent to handle medical and healthcare related decision making. And this could include end of life healthcare decisions around things like artificial nutrition and hydration. It's important to note this is not the same thing as what some people refer to as a do not resuscitate order that controls CPR when and how it's used for you. That would be called a physician orders for life-sustaining treatment form, and that's something that your doctor can provide you. So in short, a power of attorney, that appoints someone to handle your financial and personal affairs, and an advanced healthcare directive appoints someone to be in charge of medical and healthcare decision-making. And what's great about both of these documents is that while we have capacity, while we can make decisions and communicate them, we can speak to the people that we want to be our power of attorney or to be our representative for our advanced healthcare directive. We can explain to them what we want, make sure they understand and agree, make sure it's someone that we trust, and then make sure our wishes are documented. If this is not in place, and we become incapacitated, the only other option is a guardianship, which requires starting a court case. And on top of a difficult situation with you losing capacity, that's an additional hurdle for your loved ones to go through to make sure you're taken care of, which we can alleviate a little bit of that burden by making sure these documents are in place while we have capacity. Another important legal document, which people have mentioned already, is a will. And most of us are familiar with a will. And it does three main things. It describes your property, what you own, houses, land, money, other items, who you want to receive that property when you pass away. And it appoints an agent, also called an executor or a personal representative, to make sure that this happens. The executor uses the probate process to distribute the property. Now, a will is helpful because all of us have thoughts about what we want to happen to our earthly possessions after we pass. We want it to go to certain family members, friends, or to causes that we support. And a will is one way of making sure that happens. Also, a will is like one gift that you can leave to your loved ones of them not having to go through a contentious process to decide, you know, who should get what, or having the state of Alaska's laws decide who gets what. If your thoughts may differ from what the intestacy statutes would dictate, or if you know that family members may not be able to agree on things after you pass, a will can make sure that that is not something that has to come up and create problems when people are already going through a hard time with your passing. And I can mention a couple of free resources that you can use to help you get a power of attorney, get an advanced healthcare directive. Alaska Legal Services has a website called alaskalawhelp.org. And if you go to alaskalawhelp.org/classroom, there's an option to get more information, including forms for both a power of attorney and an advanced healthcare directive. Also on that same website, you can find free resources for how to prepare your own will. Now, you can also request help from Alaska Legal Services. It does require an application process, but you can call our Bethel office at 907-543-2237 or our statewide toll-free number, 1-888-478-2572, to get that application process started. And another thing I wanted to mention, especially since we're talking about communities and the resources that are already there, Alaska Legal Services has a program called the Community Justice Worker Program, and it's where people that are not attorneys take a free training to learn how to provide a specific legal intervention to an ALSC client. So we call them our pro bono volunteers. They take a free online self-paced training, and afterwards they get a client either in their community or anywhere around the state. And to become a community justice worker, you can go to alsc-law.org/CJW. And there's even a course on how to write and prepare wills. And I'll just mention that Yasmin is one of our community justice worker volunteers. She's a rock star. And I know she's been able to help us with wills clinics, other things.
Yeah, awesome. Thank you so much for sharing all that, Joy. That was really thorough. Guys, that's all the questions that I've prepared for today. Are there any thoughts that you have that we didn't cover already or want to refresh our audience and listeners on any resources, support, either themselves if they think they're going through dementia, already have it, or if they're a caregiver or someone who does?
Your companion's needs. Maybe you help out around their home for 5 hours a week. Enjoying lunch, you know, with a senior in your community. Yeah, spending time with another senior is part of the senior companion program. So if you are a senior yourself and you're looking for a way to get involved in your community, become a senior companion, and you get that tax-free stipend, which is really nice because it won't affect any benefits you might be receiving. And it also includes an annual trip to Anchorage for their training of volunteers from all over the state. So you get to be part of a really cool network. And for more information on the Senior Companion Program, you can call 907-717-7932. Alzheimer's Resource of Alaska also does a ton of online caregiving courses, so visit their website or call the Anchorage office at 907-561-3313.
Awesome. Thank you, Yasmin. Steffi, Joy, any other final words from you guys?
Just want to say thank you for having us. This was wonderful, and hopefully we get a little bit more information out. And please feel free to connect with either of us.
I'll just say thank you as well, and we're all going to become older or have family members that are becoming older, and the more information we have, the better prepared we can all be. So just encourage all families to talk about these things.
Yeah.
For anyone listening, you're not alone. Thank you, Ryan.
Yeah, well said. Thank you guys so much for your time and insights. Really appreciate having you on.